Pucks with Hags is powered by Prize Picks, the exclusive daily fantasy partner of the CLNS Media Network.
Welcome to the Pucks with Hags podcast, powered by Prize Picks, the exclusive daily fantasy partner of the CLNS Media Network. I am your host, Joe Haggerty. You can find my work at joehaggerty.substack.com. Subscribe to a premium membership. You get all my NHL and Bruins writing sent straight directly to your inbox. I also file daily during the playoffs for Boston Sports Journal. So go to bostonsportsjournal.com and check that out. This is the 85th episode of the Pucks with Hags podcast. And I have with me a longtime friend and colleague, Mick Colaggio. Mick, please tell everybody where they can find your stuff.
Hey, thank you, Hags. Rink Wrap, my blog. I link to it on X and Twitter. Follow at Mick Colaggio. And let's see, bostonhockeynow.com. I do a Sunday column. And I contribute to the hockey news as well when I come up with those periodical issues.
That's right. And check out all of Mick's stuff. Prize Picks is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America and the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. They also sponsor the Pucks with Hags podcast. That is why you should pay special close attention to this. Instead of battling thousands of other players that could be pros or sharks, you simply pick more or less than on 2-6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll right in. Hits were a big one in game three there. The Bruins had, I think they had almost, they had what, like 70, 80, almost 90 hits, I think, after the first period. It was crazy. But that is one of the stat projections that you can actually win on and pick more or less with Prize Picks. It's fun and pretty simple. Download the Prize Picks app today and use the code CLNS for a first deposit match of up to $100. It's download the Prize Picks app today and use the code CLNS for a first deposit match of up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. All right. The Bruins are up 2-1 in the series, Mick. Big 4-2 win in game three. Really impressive game. I think that's a game that both sides obviously really wanted. Game threes are pretty pivotal when the series changes settings to a different venue. The Bruins had lost home ice advantage by losing game two. They get it right back in game three. But I felt like that was one of those games where you saw both teams scratching and clawing and battling to get that game three because they both knew how important it was going to be to get the upper hand in the series and to get that win. Your thoughts just on that game three win now that it's a couple days in the rearview mirror with 2 days off in between games three and four in Toronto?
Two biggest thoughts for me were that while I would have started Ullmark in this series based on his post-trade deadline superior play,
yep.
Swayman in game three was so exceptional.
Yep.
That at this point, I would most definitely give him the keys to the car right now. And I think it's a long way to the finish line. But I think that, and who knows, 2 weeks, 3 weeks down the road, if they continue to win because Swayman's so good, that Ullmark might need to become involved. But this is uncharted territory if we go that way. But I right now think that abandoning the rotation is the move because it's not that Ullmark wasn't great. If he wasn't great, they would have lost game two, probably 5-6 goals. But I think that right now this was exceptional play by Swayman. That's number one. Number two, nice to have you back, Brad Marchand. And the goal itself isn't the reason I felt that way, but it really punctuated his performance in that game and showed me that he's really still capable of being Brad Marchand in a playoff series. I just felt like the similarity of where he put that puck was so much like the game that I think was a game three overtime and Uniondale back in 21, where
yep.
he scored from that sharp angle down the left wing.
Yep.
And popped it in the top on the short side over the shoulder. And I think it was Varlamov. But anyway, that was kind of like a game the Bruins stole. I didn't feel as much that they stole this one, but no. I felt like it's such a tight series that I'd stay with Swayman. And thankfully Brad Marchand was able to impact the game in a way that we haven't seen a little bit here.
No, the Bruins were just okay in that game. They were obviously like fighting hard, physical, like you know, they were competitive, but I felt like they took it to another level after Toronto scored. Once they got down 1-0, they were a better team, and they came out with it. They got to the next level at that point, and it really kicked them into a different gear. And I thought they were, from that point on, they were the better team in the game, and it showed on the scoreboard. And that was impressive to me. And there was a couple of times where they, you know, in Marchand answering right away when they tied the game was impressive to me too. That was a sign of a team that was incredibly locked in, that they came right back and answered. There were a couple times in that
How many
game.
Times this year that happened?
Very impressive character moments for that Boston Bruins team. You know, you really saw them respond to adversity and respond to a push from the other team in a way that you need to have in the playoffs. You need to have those responses and the ability and the wherewithal to do it. And they showed it in that game.
Toronto got it in game two. Boston got it in game three, which is great to see, because in the case of the Bruins, they've been on the receiving end of that knockout punch too many times this season.
Yep.
And to see it again in the playoffs, only two games into the series, was something that was so devastating that you felt like, okay, ignore it, park it, leave it over there. Let's pretend it didn't happen and go forward here. They've been able to do that, which is amazing. They didn't win the game, but they also didn't hang their heads. So if they came back and I don't know how hopeful I am about the series, because we've seen this iteration of the Bruins. I don't know if you can really call this the same iteration as we've seen the last several years, but they've won a lot of game threes and the series they've had home ice on and lost these series. So, you know, 2, 3, 4, you know, they're all big. Like that's like the coaches always say.
They have, but and they are all big, but I would counter with that Toronto has got some areas they're pretty dreadful. Their special teams are bad, especially their penalty kill. The Bruins are 5 for 10 on the power play so far in this series, and they're over 90% on the PK. And granted, some of that in game three was Jeremy Swayman standing on his head. He made some great saves because they were getting pretty good looks on their power play. Toronto was in game three. So Swayman, I think, was their best penalty killer in a lot of ways in that game. But in general, they have done a very good job of keeping Toronto's power play off the board. And Toronto's penalty kill is hot garbage. It's not good. And it was not good during the regular season. It was one of the worst in the NHL. It clearly looked like an area that the Bruins were going to be able to exploit and attack, even though their power play isn't exactly lights out and wasn't down the stretch. But the adjustment that Jim Montgomery made, switching up the personnel into two equal units, and the lack of just ability to shut down and function of the Toronto penalty kill has allowed the Bruins power play to be a massive factor in this series. And I don't think that's going to change. The one power play goal that they scored in game three, where Marchand threw it to the front of the net and then DeBrusk scored on the rebound. Did you see where the Toronto defensemen were on that play? They were both along the sideboards fighting for the puck. There was nobody in front of the net. That is friggin' peewee squirt hockey. Like, that's a mistake you make when you're 10 years old. Yeah. And these guys are NHL defensemen in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and they're both rushing to the puck and leaving the front of the net open in the defensive zone on a penalty kill. We're not even talking 5-on-5. We're talking on a penalty kill. This was Edmondson and McCabe.
Right.
Huge screw up. Huge mistake. And, like, if that, you know, that seeing stuff like that from the Toronto Maple Leafs, it doesn't really it breed a lot of confidence in them, and it doesn't instill a lot of fear that they're going to be able to beat the Bruins four times in this series. I just think their goaltending and their defense continues to have rough spots where they show that they're not up to par. I mean, and the Trent Frederick goal, that the first goal that was scored, like Ilya Samsonov definitely didn't shut off the short side fast enough. I give him a tiny bit of a mulligan because I think that shot ricocheted off Kemp's stick and went kind of took off a little bit.
Yeah, right.
So it was hard for Samsonov.
Early deflections, early in flight.
Yeah. So it definitely like took off like a rocket a little bit, but still, if you're Samsonov, you just have to shut off the entire short side. You can't let any pucks in that are coming in short side like that, whether it was deflected or not. But in general, I think what we've thought were going to be the weaknesses of this Leafs team, even though they've been okay defensively 5-on-5 for the most part, I think, But in general,
Well, I thought the Bruins, they really denied the Bruins inside ice in game two. And
yeah.
I
In
thought
general,
that.
though, the Leafs' weaknesses, I think, that we thought were going to be their weaknesses before the series are coming to bear. And I think it's going to make it hard for the Toronto to win the series and easier for the Bruins to win the series.
Yeah, I'm really not. I'm very uncommittal there. I feel like if the Bruins were Carolina or Florida, I'd be, clapping and stomping one foot to everything you say. But right now, I see a Bruins team with its own vulnerabilities that in different ways, sort of balance these books. And so I do feel like this is one of those series that might really come down to whoever's cool-headed with the puck on their stick at the right moment. That might be what happens here. Like Jake DeBrusk, he's been an impactful player in these series, but there's been other times when I'm watching the game where I just feel like, oh, he took the outside route. Oh, he's not, it's not doing. There's a lot of stuff he hasn't done that passed my eye test, but then he goes and he scores. So he's if he can do that, if he can be Bobby Ryan, God bless him and God bless the
I mean,
Bruins.
Mick, I'll pick apart Jake DeBrusk a little bit at times for the things that he does, but he's top five in the NHL right now in the playoffs in goals and assists. I mean, in
Right,
goals and
right.
points.
He's Bobby.
You
He's
know,
being. He's the Bruins' Bobby Ryan right
he's
now, Mike.
producing. So, like, as long as he's producing goals and he's scoring on the power play, and you know,
Right.
four of the 5 points have been on the power play, but still, as long as he's doing that, I don't really care if he does flybys every once. Like, he's gonna be able to get away with some of that stuff if he is putting the puck in the net like he is now. And like, to his credit, like he this may sustain for a little bit because I think there's a lot of money in it for him if he has a huge playoff and if he continues to produce. I think there's a lot of motivation for him and there's a lot on the table for him likely going to free agency after this postseason, that the dollar amounts are going to go up and the amount he's going to get from somebody is going to go up if he, you know, can show once again that he's already got a little bit of that reputation of a playoff performer. He's had some pretty good series, especially against the Leafs in his past, even though on balance, I think his whole postseason body of work hasn't been outstanding. But he's done enough things, especially against the Leafs in the playoffs, I think, to get somebody to believe that he's a big
Oh,
game
no
performer
question.
and
Yeah.
that he can perform in the
The
playoffs.
money is going to be there. Someone's going to show him the money. I don't know what kind of money, but it's going to be enough to get him to, Am's gray. So.
And I think he's, you know, I think he's done well. I think he's been one of their best players as far as actually executing and producing offensively.
Well,
So I'm
opportunism is
not
a
gonna.
big piece of who the Bruins are right now. They're a defensive shell and a great goalie and an opportunistic kind of offense. And right now, he is the
Well, they're a
epitome of
special teams
opportunity.
offense. Their power play is carrying them right now. 5 for 10 and so
Right.
far in
And
three games, it's really carrying them and doing the job. And I think that's as much about what they're doing as it is about Toronto just being horrendous on the penalty kill. Like that I think it's both
well, the
factors.
Bruins made drastic changes late
They
in the season.
did,
And
and
that
it
had
worked.
certainly breathed life into their special teams. And Toronto's now going to come up with a solution or else.
Well, I
And
just don't think they have one penalty kill wise. Like, Mick, look at the numbers from the regular season. They were like 23rd or 24th in the league. They sucked on the penalty kill. The
well,
Toronto Maple
this is
Leafs
what
are
I love about the
awful
playoffs so much, is
on the
teams have to
PK.
make drastic philosophical and theoretical and strategic changes and personnel changes in order to do any, like the Bruins did it with the power play. They were abysmal. Then
Well,
they
yeah, they
did.
were, but I mean, over the balance of the season, they've been okay though. Like Toronto's been one of the worst penalty kills in the league consistently
Well,
all year,
and
and
I'll add this.
I don't think philosophies and shuttling personnel is going to change. They're bad at it. It's a
Well,
weak.
maybe they don't have an internal solution. But I will also pile on to you what you're saying right now and say this. A struggle team can win the Stanley Cup with a struggling power play. A team cannot contend for the Stanley Cup with a struggling penalty kill.
Correct. And I think the best solution they have is not changing philosophies or personnel because I think they're just bad on the PK. I just don't think they have any viable solutions. They haven't all year. The only solution they have on the penalty kill is not get on the penalty kill and not have Bertuzzi and Domi and all these guys taking stupid penalties, but they're doing it. So, like, the combination of all of that stuff is playing
Yeah,
into
it's
them
early
having some
though.
problems.
Well, the only other thing about that, the only other caveat there is that it's early in the series, and a lot of times the whistles go away after those first few games. So if they don't back down and continue to do what they do, and they're not doing it as cheap as they are, just imposing physicality that rides that crest of the edge between penalty and okay, then what happens in series generally at this point is what might have been a ticky-tack penalty to establish a sense of respect in the series, that tends to go away and as the series bears it goes on. So that may work in those guys' favor. We'll see.
To a degree, but I think Domi and Bertuzzi are on their radar, so they're going to continue to, you know, get calls because they're so far over the top with what they're doing. And Marchand may get a call or two as well after Keefe sort of had his soliloquy.
Let's hope not. I hope they're not going to get into rewarding that crap.
So we'll see. But like, why don't we get into that right now? I loved the way Marchand played in Game 3, and it wasn't just the goal he scored. It wasn't he was on the ice and he played a part in all four goals that they scored in that game. He was phenomenal. He was outstanding in that game. He was not backing down.
And that's what Keith's problem is.
He was giving them spirit. He was uplifting them on the bench leadership wise. He was completely getting into it with Bertuzzi and making Bertuzzi lose his mind. And he was really getting under Bertuzzi's skin. And he was getting under the skin of the Leafs in general while not stepping too far over the line, which he would do in the past. He really was balancing it nicely in Game 3, and it was effective pretty much in all areas of his game. So Sheldon Keefe, I'm sure he practiced this one in the mirror, Mick, before he went and talked to the press, because he had it well rehearsed by the time he got there. He did not like the Bertuzzi-Marchand mud wrestling episode right before Trent Frederick scored his goal that was pretty much a distraction as Frederick was going down the ice. And I think Frederick probably got a clean entry into the zone because the Leafs were so distracted with what was going on between Bertuzzi and Marchand.
That was a little like that Bozak on St. Louis tripping Achari, possibly partial slew footing Achari in the corner. The Bruins were similarly distracted on the resulting goal.
And they stopped playing for sure.
Yeah, they stopped playing. Wait, you know, like what the hell? You know, it's just, it completely arrested their attention. In this case, it arrested Toronto's attention. But I think one of the things that's really important to note right here is that the officials know that this is Domi Bertuzzi initiating the Bruin and engaging Marchand. Marchand, what he does that really pisses off some of these younger players, is that when they engage him and try to get under his skin by giving him a stick here or there, they don't escape without, you know, getting bit by the snake on their way away from the snake space. And it annoys the crap out of them, and they come back for more. So they're kind of like the bear at the beehive. And it really trying to get at Brad Marchand as an initiator is a huge, huge mistake. Better to let the sleeping dog lie.
Yeah, and I mean, they made the statement right from the start of Game 1. You know, Domi was going after him before the first puck drop in Game 1, cross-checking him in the back of the head and really going at him, and needed a 30-second timeout from the ref where he was in his ear whispering to him before they dropped the puck. But this is what Sheldon Keefe had to say after Game 3 about Marchand. You need to play through it. He's a world-class player, both in ability and how he plays, the gamesmanship and everything. He's been in the league long enough, as you can see, that he gets calls. It's unbelievable, actually, how it goes. But you've got to play through that stuff. I don't think there's another player in this series that gets away with taking out Bertuzzi's legs like that. There's not another. And by the way, Bertuzzi took out Marchand's legs in that same, tete-a-tete.
Of course he did.
The bigger issue, I thought, was, Marchand kind of elbow-slash-butt-ended Bertuzzi in the head as they were going down the ice at one point and completely got away with that, which was definitely a penalty. There's not another player that gets away with that, but Marchand does, and it's an art, and he's elite at it. So we have to avoid those situations where he can put us into those spots. I think we've managed him pretty well, but we make a mistake at a key time that allows him to get the winner. And I think this is Sheldon Keefe in, probably because he's gone up against guys like John Cooper and Paul Maurice in playoff series in the last few years. This is him trying to be a coach like that and send a message through the media to try to curry favor with the refs and to get some calls on Marchand. He does it in kind of a clumsier way than those other coaches do because they're much better at it, much more experienced at it. But do you think this has any effect whatsoever on anything as far as Marchand goes?
Well, it certainly won't affect how Marchand plays.
No.
I do get concerned about how the Bruins have success and become a less snarly team. That has been a pattern for a long time with this club. And I feel like they get too satisfied and they don't build on what they get from these situations as much as they sit on them. And so one thing that bugs me is the Bruins tend to, I worry that the Bruins won't be as aggressive in how they play the game. And if they're not, then, or it won't be all everybody with that cumulative effect of how guys feed off of other guys. It might be certain guys are disaffected and will just do what they do. Charlie Coyle will do what Charlie Coyle does. But and Danton Heinen, I can pretty much picture him the same way this season for the Bruins, a really desperate player also playing for a contract, who is really got a lot of good years left and has had something to prove. And so, you know, yeah, there's motivation there as well. But I get concerned that the Bruins might take their foot off the gas a little bit in terms of how they play as a team. And if they do that, I think this Toronto team is too skilled not to send this thing back to Boston 2-2.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I don't know that they're going to – I think the only way they're going to let their foot off the gas, it's not going to be like a – it's it what it's going to be is they just don't have the legs in the game. Like I kind of thought we saw that to a degree in game two. You know, I didn't think they had the energy level, and that they certainly didn't have the desperation level that Toronto did to win that second game in Boston. Austin Matthews had a superstar game. Like, there was a couple things at play, but I don't know that there was like a tentativeness to play physical or you know, sort of a fear of it or in avoiding it. I think they just, once Toronto got going with the power plays in the second period and got some energy from that, I think it was a totally different game. And Austin Matthews was just next level. I think he was the best player on the ice. If he plays games, if he has more games like that in the series and they let him get to that sort of supernova level, I think the Bruins could be in trouble. He wasn't like that in game three. He hasn't been like that most of the time. They've done a pretty good job of putting wraps on him. Mitch Marner had a really nice play on that first goal, but that was pretty much all we've seen out of him in this series. William Nylander is the question, I guess. Now we hear maybe it's migraines that have been keeping him out, and maybe he's going to be able to play in game four. I think if you add him to the mix, if he's healthy, that certainly could change a little bit of what's going on here.
Yeah, getting him in uniform will give me uplifting to their team and might make everybody a little better in their first 10 minutes. First shift, everybody will be better. And so there's going to be hits on the Bruins defensemen. I think that we got to, you know, really be on the lookout for that. There's going to be guys who are flying in. So while Marchand might be ignored and laid off, they might like say, let's stay away from Marchand and let the refs just wait and see until he tugs on somebody's hands and a hockey play and send him to the box and everybody will give a standing ovation and blah, blah, blah. But really, I think what I'm looking more for is them going back to their game of soft dumping the Bruins right wing corner. So the left shot defensemen have to do the retrievals and let's see how they come up with it. They should really be on the ball to try to test their left siders tonight.
Saturday night. All right, you referenced this a little bit. This is definitely something we should and will talk about and want to talk about is the goaltending situation with the Bruins. And as you well know, because we've discussed it multiple times, I was fully in favor of Jeremy Swayman starting game one. I was fully in favor of Jeremy Swayman getting the chance to start a series based on that he hadn't done it before, that Ullmark had gotten the game one honors the previous two seasons, based on the work that he had done against Toronto during the year, dominating them, based on kind of his breakout sort of all-star performance this year. Yes, Ullmark was good down the stretch, but I just think Swayman should have started, and he did. He's been elite, like just superb, high-level, top-level in both of the games that he's played. Been a huge reason that they've won both of those games. Ullmark was pretty good in game two as well. But not as good as Swayman had been in games one and games three. I would have even liked Swayman to play game two after he had started game one. I understood why they went with Ullmark, and I think they definitely wanted to at least get them into a rotation. I feel like for the first four games, there was maybe a plan in place to go back and forth for the first four games of the series, and then after that, they would make determinations. But Swayman has been so good in games one and games three. If they had a plan to go to Ullmark in game four, they should change the plan, nix the plan, and play Jeremy Swayman in game four. And I think you need to continue to go to him as long as he's playing the way that he's playing, because not only is he giving them next level elite goaltending at the highest levels when he's been at his best this season, he's getting in the heads of the Toronto Maple Leafs. I think he's frustrating them. I think they're wondering like how they can get pucks past him. I think mentally he's in their kitchen a little bit. Yeah. And I think based on the way that he's dominated them all year, he's giving you an edge right now when you put him in net that I think you have to continue to go with Swayman until that changes, until that dynamic ends. And look, you know, if I think you're right, I think Allmark may end up, because I think this is going to be a 6 or a 7 game series. Allmark may end up getting in another game later on in the series if Swayman cools off, if circumstances change. But given the way that he's played, and also given that he's got 2 days of rest now between games 3 and games 4, and he should be well-rested and fine going into game 4, I think every sign, every indication points to the Bruins have to play Jeremy Swayman in game 4, and they would be making a huge mistake if they like went to a cockamamie, we got to play somebody every other game rotation just because they said that that's what they were going to do before the series. Stuff changes in the playoffs. You need to do what's best for the team and get the win. Swayman is what's the best for the Bruins in game 4 to get a win.
I didn't feel like they were disarming a bomb with any of the early decisions in the series. I felt like both goalies were playing well. I felt like Allmark was outstanding since the trade deadline, and it was Swayman's turn, so they stuck with the rotation, isn't it? Didn't Allmark play the last game of the regular season?
Yes. Yeah.
So they stuck with the rotation, and they're still on the rotation, technically speaking. Yeah. That having been said, while Allmark played very well and gave the Bruins a chance to win game 2 that they did not do, something Tuukka Rask used to get a lot less credit for than he should have during the latter stages of his career for those kinds of performances. Swayman has been Conn Smythe consideration level.
Yes.
This has been that kind of level of goaltending. It's not that one guy was here and one guy was here. It's that they were both here and now this guy's here. And if this guy is going to be weight banging off the ceiling, then to me, you know, you got to go. You got to see if you can put a stranglehold on this thing.
Well, and he's been here against the Leafs all year too, Mick. You know, he's been this against this team all season long.
Maybe that's a mental thing right now, like you said. Maybe there's a mental part of that right now. I never thought Braden Holtby was a great goalie. But I know that the way the Bruins used to have a hard time with the Capitals, Braden Holtby wound up becoming a focal point. And how we beat Holtby, and used to annoy the crap out of me because he's not the problem. It's getting into good positions to shoot, you know? So, but now I'm like, you know, hey, this guy's playing lights out. I'd really like to see, I'll be pretty disappointed if they come back with the rotation and say, well, we said we'd do it through game 4. Don't, you're in charge. You answer to yourself.
Right.
Players say that they hug it out after every win. They'll keep hugging it out after every win. I just hope that they don't think these egos are this fragile. Let's go. You know, this is the LFG part of the season, and none of these other considerations should be on their radar. It should be about winning the series, getting a stranglehold on it. Now, let's just say Toronto has a really great game and things break down in front of Swayman and he's not able to you know, put a lid on it. And then come back with Allmark. But I think right now with Swayman playing at the level he is, that this game 4 start really is sort of a no-brainer.
It should be a no-brainer. It really should. You should not be a prisoner to the goalie rotation where it forces you to make a decision that you don't think is in the best interest of winning right now and winning the game. Jim Montgomery made the good moves lineup wise, made the correct moves, I think. Weatherspoon and Lowry in, Grizzlick out, JVR in, actually had a good game, one of his best games, I think, in recent memory, as he was slow down the stretch. He couldn't finish the chances that he had, but he had some great chances. And I didn't even remember, was it Lauko that came out for JVR to go in?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So the changes worked.
I was not crazy about that change, but I do understand why we got a great game out of JVR. And if he can maintain that level, then that's a decision, because right now Lauko gives you something on the forecheck with speed and aggression. That's something they badly need over the course of a long series. And if that's And if like they play JVR and he's not very good, then I'm going right back to Lauko. I fully expect JVR to be in there the same way I expect to see Swayman again. And if he has a good game, then yeah, soldier on here. But if he's not good and the Leafs win, then I've got to reestablish speed on the forecheck. I want more guys in there who can really get there and are willing to throw the body. And that's what I'd be looking at doing again. So while this position and these amount of shifts aren't going to be necessarily telltale, every tiny little bit. I mean, this is why the coaches spend a hold up for 14 hours a day during the playoffs in those offices, because they're trying to figure all this stuff out. And right now, I've been on the side of, yeah, am I a Lauko fan? Not so much, but I do feel like he adds something they badly need, and they don't.
I agree, but I also think Lauko sitting may have had something to do with that shot that he blocked at the end of game one. I think his foot is banged up, and maybe he wasn't skating as well as he can because of that issue. So maybe giving him a few days off with the 2 days off in between games is going to help him. So it'll be interesting to see what they do in game four. I agree with you. JVR played well enough where maybe you put him in there again, and maybe that helps Lauko get back to where you need him to be for later on in the series when you're going to need him. Parker Weatherspoon and Lowry, I thought were good. Lowry took a couple penalties, but I thought it was okay. You know,
I felt like they were picking on the rookie, and that's why I'd be hesitant to play him again if I think the refs are going to keep going that way, because a lot of times the refs don't want to penalize a veteran. They wind up picking on a rookie. And I felt like that's what happened with Lowry. So I don't feel like he did stuff wrong as much as they picked him. And I was okay with what he was doing.
He was being competitive. You know, he was trying to be competitive puck and play playoff hockey. I had no
the standards were different for him than they were for other people. But if that's how it's going to be and they're going to leverage him out, then I'm fine with Grizz coming back in. But let's do it in a diminished role. Yeah. Let's let him play on the third pairing and spot him in situations where you need him on an ozone draw or something. But not having Weatherspoon in the series at any point makes no sense to me. I'm glad to see him.
Yeah, I think matchup wise against this team, he makes sense because of his grit, because of his PK abilities. Like seeing Kevin Shattenkirk on the ice on that penalty kill where Tavares scored in game two. And Shattenkirk doesn't block the shot. Shattenkirk doesn't get in the way. Shattenkirk had
a problem with DeBrusque on that one.
Shattenkirk had 6 minutes of PK time all season long. Like, he should not be in the penalty kill.
Well, I understand why coaches go with skill, because on PK, you cannot hit. Because if you hit, you take two people out of play, and now it's 3-on-2.
Right.
You know, so you need
sticks. But he doesn't really block shots as much. He doesn't really clear the front of the net. Like, the stuff you need.
Well, he's not going to do anything in front of the net. No,
he's not going to do that stuff. And that's where the issue comes in.
It's 100% stick.
A guy like Shattenkirk needs to step in front of Tavares and take one there rather than letting that shot go through and scoring. And it's just, you know, I think Jim Montgomery mentioned after the game that it was too chaotic on the PK. And I think it was because he put a guy out there that averaged 6 seconds of penalty kill time during the regular season. Shattenkirk was not a regular guy on the PK. Guys that haven't done that situation all year into playoff situations where it's a big time important. You just don't do it.
Well, the thing that bugged me on that one is that DeBrusque tried to cheat the game. He was looking for a steal, and his whole body was aiming for that breakaway.
Yeah,
and he reached,
no, there was a lot of mistakes.
Tried to go with it, and now there's nobody in the slot when that puck comes to Tavares.
Yep.
He had, you know, I felt like he just took a gamble that was unnecessary, and it was very costly.
Yep. No, there was a lot of things going wrong on that penalty kill. There's no question about it. All right, question of the week. Not really a question as much as a statement. B.A. Morrow 31 says, this is typical Leafs running around doing dumb stuff and Marchand getting in their heads. That is the Toronto fan base talking right there. And it was funny. Joe Bowen, their radio guy, I don't know if you saw this on Twitter, was very critical of the fans at Scotiabank Arena in Game 3, basically saying they were like sitting on their hands waiting for something to happen or waiting for something bad to happen or being reactive instead of proactive and not cheering and being loud. And I think that's a function of a couple of different things, right? It's kind of like the late 80s, early 90s Celtics crowd at the Garden that was very rich crowd that was just not going to be loud and boisterous. And the tickets had become so expensive that it was this very like quiet, sort of low-key fan base.
The Bruins were like that in the early 70s, believe it or not.
Yeah.
And you get so quiet in the second period of Bruins games that there was a guy in the East End balcony who used to just scream like he was had just jumped off the Empire State Building.
Yeah.
And everybody would wait for this moment somewhere, because this is before you had even, you know, with the organ. And so this guy would just yell out this blood-curdling scream and everybody would cheer, because that was like this dull moment in the second period of almost. And this is during the Or Esposito Busek era. I mean, so.
But that's a byproduct of a team's success, right? The tickets get expensive and it prices out the really like loud, active, animated fans. So that's a big part of it, I think. And that's been an issue with the Leafs for a long time now. And the other part of it, Mick, and you know this, is the Leafs fans are basically pre-2004 Red Sox fans, where they are always waiting for something bad to happen. They're very fatalist. They're very pessimistic. And they're very
the Leafs are.
They're waiting to kick around the Leafs for another mistake.
Absolutely. Right. They're looking for the Grady Little moment. You know, I mean, and that's why they focus so much on the goalie talk. You think of the intellect of hockey in Toronto, that they get outside the crease a little bit, but I don't want that. It's not a shot at their media as much as it is the overall, we're waiting for something to fall apart here. And it's usually the goalie. Now, our great colleague, Mike Zeisberger, he's hilarious. He once called them sushi eating bankers. The attendance at the new arena in Toronto, Scotiabank is what it's now called, because I always get confused because of the Ottawa once called that.
I always get in the Air Canada Center. I can't get out of the mode of that. That was the one. That's the one I always called it.
And you go to Providence, it's still the dunk.
But that's perfect. Sushi eating bankers is the perfect way to put it. All right, let's thank our sponsors. Prize Picks, the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America, the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Instead of battling thousands of other players that could be pros or sharks, simply pick more or less than on 2-6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll right in. You can win now up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000 with baseball, hockey, and basketball today on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. You can have something for every sports fan, from basketball and hockey to League of Legends and everything in between. LeBron, as long as they're in the playoffs, the Lakers are looking in trouble. Connor McDavid, Jude Bellingham, all in the same entry. It's really simple to play. You can make your picks and submit your entry in less than 60 seconds. I mean, what's better than that? So download the Prize Picks app today and use the code CLNS for a first deposit match of up to $100. That's download the Prize Picks app today. Super easy to download and use, and use the code CLNS for a first deposit match of up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. All right, Mick, enjoy the rest of your week. Enjoy game 4 on Saturday night, and we'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
It'll be fun.
All right. And everybody else out there, thanks for listening. We'll see you at the rink.